is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hi, this is Gannon Baker, and you're listening to the
Hoopheads
podcast.
Hey, Hoopheads. Wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market, and they truly accelerate skill development faster than ever. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Also, make sure to check out the new Dr. Dish Home Machine, which is perfect for these crazy times when gyms and schools are closed. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
It's a program that's for students to foster that positive development and their well-being, but challenging them and helping them acquire the right set of skills and experiences and relationships that enables them to develop into successful and contributing adults to our society.
Mihai Raducanu is the president and CEO of his own basketball training business, No Limit Performance, and also works with Gannon Baker as his director of business development. Mihai teaches two graduate level classes as a university adjunct professor at Canisius College, as well as being an inspirational and educational speaker. Mihai earned a business marketing and a business management degree from Coastal Carolina University, where he was an NCAA Division I basketball player. He also holds a master's degree from Canisius College in sports administration. Mihai grew up in Romania. He moved to Canada at age 15 and played his high school basketball at Cathedral High School in Hamilton, Ontario, where in 1998 he was a OFSAA champion and in 1999 an OFSAA silver medalist. Mihai was then selected to play on the Canadian Junior National Team in 1999. Mihai has served as a skill development coach for three teams in the NBL Canada, Mississauga Power, currently the Raptors 905, the London Lightning, and the Niagara River Lions. He has also worked with the Boston Celtics D-League affiliate Maine Red Claws for the past three seasons as a guest trainer. We just launched our Hoopheads Pod webinar series with some of the top minds in the game across all levels, from grassroots to the NBA. If you're focused on improving your coaching and your team, we've got you covered. Visit hoopheadspod.com/webinars to get registered. If you're enjoying the Hoopheads Pod, please leave us a 5-star rating and review on your favorite podcast app. Tell your friends in the coaching community about the show, and make sure you're subscribed so you never miss an episode. Check out hoopheadspod.com where you can listen to every episode we've ever recorded and find out more about the mission that drives our show. Have a pen and paper in hand so you can take down some notes as you listen to this episode with Mihai Raducanu from No Limit Performance and Gannon Baker Basketball. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads Podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel. And tonight we are pleased to welcome to the podcast Mihai Raducanu. Mihai, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Unbelievable job with the name pronunciation.
All right. That's all. We're always off to a good start. As we said before we jumped on, you never want to butcher a person's name in the introduction. So I'm glad I passed that with flying colors, and now we can jump into you and your basketball journey. Let's start by going back to your childhood. You grew up in Romania. Talk a little bit about that, and then we'll eventually get to you and your family getting to Canada and getting you introduced to basketball. But let's go back in time to when you were a kid. Just talk to us a little bit about your childhood experiences.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up in a communist country. It was communist until I was 10 years old. I lived in a city called Cluj-Napoca in Romania, part of Transylvania. And, we grew up as any other family would over there, struggling to find food, struggling to find money, struggling to feed ourselves. But both of my parents were athletes. My dad was a track and field guy, and my mother played basketball. So I tried both. When I was about 12, I really started liking basketball. So I played for in Europe at the time. It was a tier system for clubs, and I played on the youngest club team for my city. And that's how I started, man. I started playing, and I became national champion at the age of 13. I still have a DVD on that.
Nice.
Got invited to the tallest players in the country camp. It was 10 tallest people in the country my age. And We had an amazing training session in the mountains for a couple of weeks, and I learned a lot about myself. And one of the higher tier players, I guess, was Big George, 7'7", George Borishan. I'm sure you know who that is.
Absolutely.
He gave me a pair of shoes when I was young.
He was in a movie. I know him from a movie, man.
That's him.
What was that movie that he was in?
My Giant.
Yes.
That was a good one. Billy Crystal, man. Him and Billy Crystal.
Look at that. You got me 2 minutes into the podcast.
Mihai, you're doing something right, man. You got Jason to jump in really early tonight. Good work.
It's that Eastern European history.
That's it.
But yeah, that's where my journey started. I mean, my mom just said, "Hey, you should play basketball." And I remember showing up, and you get right into it. And there's 12 other guys your age, and they put a ball in your hand, and they put you through all kinds of training sessions, and you either like it or you don't. There's no in between, right?
What did you like about it? What did you like about basketball when you first get introduced to it? What was it about the game that struck you and said, "Hey, I want to keep doing this"?
Same thing I love about it today, and I'll be 40 next month. I'll be 40 years old, and same thing I love about it today. I love being on the court with a bunch of like-minded guys that I know they have my back, and I absolutely love competing. I just loved competing, but having four other guys on the court with me, and to this day, I still love it.
What do you remember about some of the training methods when you went to that camp for the 10 tallest people in your age level? What do you remember about some of the training that you did at that time?
Well, we had, so that was 1993, and our coach was about 91 years old. This is not a joke. That's not a joke. So the training methods were extremely outdated, but they were hard. We were running up and down hills. We were carrying each other up and down hills. We were puking. We were rolling down hills in our own puke. It was just grueling. But interestingly enough, I still talk to some of those guys to this day that were on that team that we had our backs. And it was really a team building. The guy was a Phil Jackson type of guy before his time.
Interesting. And so when you're training with those guys and you're playing on this team, what does your season look like? Like, how many games are you playing with that particular group? And what was the level of basketball like? If you could, give us something to compare it to. What was that level of basketball like in Romania?
Yeah, so for me, because we're so young, so we were the third team down. So there was the pro team, the number one team that was playing. Then there was a group of guys right underneath them that were kind of jumping back and forth between playing on the big court, we used to call it, and they would play in different national tournaments or regional tournaments than national tournaments. And then for us, we're the young kids that were just prepping. They were trying to see who's going to be able to make it, who's got good bodies, who's got good brain, who's got good potential, who's got good work ethic. And we practiced. I mean, we practiced for 5-6 months, maybe play a couple of inter-squad scrimmages, and then we'd go down to and play in the national tournament. You travel by train and you go down, and we won it. We won it when I was 13, and it was a big deal for us. And then I got to dabble. I got to dabble with the top team for a couple of games, and I'll never forget that. I'll never forget being in that locker room, showering with these 7-footers and playing my 5 minutes. And I remember having my first dunk. Just incredible. Those are my vivid memories.
So how important was it for you in that time of your development to be able to play against older, more experienced players? I got to imagine that you can attribute a lot of your eventual success to kind of getting beat up and pushed around when you were younger by some of those older players.
Yeah, that plays a lot into it. But I think the knowledge that they put on you, the way you conduct yourself pre-practice, the way you conduct yourself in practice, the way they can push you on the court, and the way they can be your friend and your brother off the court, those are the things that really made me really like basketball and understand what it takes to be that good. They all worked their butts off. Guys were sleeping with ankle weights on their legs just because they thought it would make them jump higher, and guys would go and run the hills on their own, and guys would get 500 shots up every single day. And that's what you learn from the older guys. The physicality, yes, them being that much better than you, yes, you learn and you admire all that and you aspire to be that good. But at the end of the day, the mental aspect of things and them showing you what a true professional should look like, that's what really sticks with you.
What was the level of popularity of basketball in Romania during that era?
That was, I mean, that was when George was kind of the first guy to leave, and he went to France and he played for Portes over there. I don't know if you remember that far back, but he was the icon for us. And there was a couple other guys that left after, but it was probably the second sport. Soccer is always going to be number one over there, but it was probably the second sport. But fans were going out. There was horns and typical European, crowd watching the games. And I remember going to almost every home game, walking or taking the bus by myself when I was 10, 11, 12.
What was the craziest fan story you remember from that time when you were going to games?
Nothing seems crazy to me, right? Like from flares and smoke and horns and people fighting. I mean, it was just normal. So I don't think there's anything that really sticks out to me. But that's just the norm in European gyms. They cleaned it up a bit now, obviously. But back then, it was just like a soccer match, right?
That's crazy. It's kind of funny. So then obviously when the communist regime in Romania falls and your family decides that you're going to immigrate to Canada, you get here when you're, I believe, age 15. Is that right?
Correct. Yeah, I was 15.
Okay.
Just turned 15.
So just describe for us what your feelings were like just in general in terms of leaving your home country, moving halfway across the world, getting here, not being able to speak English or speak the language or communicate. Just talk about what that was like as a 15-year-old kid, because we think about how any of us were at age 15 and just sort of how challenging that time of life can be for anybody. And here you're going through this tremendous life change and your whole entire life that you've known for 15 years has been uprooted. Just talk a little bit about what that was like just as a human being. Forget about the basketball side of it.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, first of all, you guys don't know me that well, and I'm always excited. I'm always excited to do things. I'm always excited to get challenged. Then the lasting images in my head of leaving was me and my family being packed, my mom, my dad, and my sister packing up on a train, leaving the train station. My grandparents are out there, and my two grandmas, actually only my two grandmas were out there watching us, and some relatives and some people, and everybody's crying, and I'm smiling, and I'm like, this is gonna be cool. We're going on an adventure, something new, something cool for us. And it's hard to explain, but everybody wants to get out of there, right? Just because the way life was, because the way we grew up with being oppressed with communism. And I remember leaving my grandfather, my mom's dad. I went to say goodbye, and he was ill by then he had some cancer issues, and he was laying in bed, and I went to say goodbye, and he said, "Hey, take care of yourself, take care of your sister, do really good. I'll never see you again." And I said, "Oh, that's crazy. You're going to see me again." But he goes, no, just promise me, right? And 2 weeks after we got to Canada, he died. And that always stuck in my head. And my mom couldn't go see it to her own father's funeral because we're just fresh in Canada. We couldn't go. And those two things really stick in my head about leaving. And then getting to Canada, not being able to speak the language, being dropped off by somebody in a hotel in outside Toronto, on the outskirts of Toronto, and four of us in a hotel room with $3,000 to our name, trying to figure it out. But we did. we did. And, some luck came along the way. So some people that my parents knew from Romania, we got a hold of them. We had a phone number. My mom called. They said, "Hey, we're 45 minutes away from you. Why don't you come stay with us?" And it so happened that the next door neighbor was a basketball coach who, my friends, they translated that I like to play basketball. And the guy put me in contact with Coach Mark Walton. And Coach Mark Walton is the winningest high school coach ever in Canada. He is a basketball legend. And I just basically landed in a hotbed of high school basketball with the greatest coach in the country. And And he just started developing me because I wasn't developed at all, right? And well, sorry, not at all. I shouldn't say at all, but I wasn't ready. I didn't know. I didn't know what to expect. So that was the journey to get to Canada.
How tall were you when you got here?
I was 6'6" and 165 pounds. Oh yeah.
There you go. Yeah, well, yeah. Man, you know, it's funny. You hear that story and you just think about how that whole process could have gone. And I think it starts with just your attitude and how you approached it. And then you combine that with the good fortune of getting connected to Coach Walton and having that opportunity that, who knows, you could have ended up in a different city, in a different place, and never found that basketball mentor that could have kind of guided you through the process. Talk a little bit about the challenges of not being able to speak the language when you first get here and just how you went about handling that, both from a basketball and a school and just a cultural perspective.
Well, you know, I was in grade 10 when I came here. So I finished grade 9 in Romania and started grade 10 in Canada. And I registered to the high school and I went in, and a guy who's one of my best friends to this day, his name is Mike Lawton. He was in my gym class and he looked at me and he asked me to dunk the ball. And I was wearing dress shoes and uniform, was a Catholic school uniform, but I didn't know what he was saying. I didn't know what he wanted me to do. So he handed me the ball and pointed to the rim. And I just jumped straight off the ground in my dress shoes and my uniform and just hammered the ball. And that was just instant friendship.
So, yeah, I like this guy.
Yeah, yeah, instant friendship. And their junior team was really good. Junior team at the high school was really, really good. And Coach Walton was the senior team coach. And he grabbed me as a young immigrant, grabbed me and said, come play for me. I can teach you. And he asked me if I like basketball, and I said, I do, I really do. And he said, you know, do you want to be really good? And I said, I always want to be good. Like, but, you know, dictionary open, translating, it's crazy, the communication. Coach Walton will tell you to this day that when I called him, he thought he was like a 75-year-old drunk man playing a trick on him. Because I had the dictionary, I was translating as I was going. But yeah, that was it. And Coach Wong just said, hey, if you want to be good, you got to go 30 minutes before practice, stay 30 minutes after practice, and do what I say. And that's what I did. I just love basketball. But I was lucky that our program was good. I was lucky that guys around me were super competitive. I was lucky that we hung out on and off the court, and we ended up having an amazing high school career.
What's your favorite memory from your time playing high school basketball? What sticks out? Maybe something on the court, something off the court, a game, relationship with a teammate. What's your most vivid memories of being a high school player?
Well, you know, people that didn't go to my high school, they don't understand our relationship. But to this day, I communicate with about 70% of my teammates on a weekly basis, some on a daily basis. And that all stems from Coach Walton building what he built for us. But we did everything together. My buddy Mike, who taught me how to speak English, his mom had a Suburban, and she'd pick all of us up for school. All of us. I mean, the whole team. She'd pick us up in the morning and take us to school. And then we'd go in packs to the YMCA and beat up on people on the weekend and on the court. And we ended up being 33-0 in North America. We won everything. We had seven guys play NCAA basketball. Three of us were on the junior national team, and everybody else played university basketball except one guy who played 14 years professional football. That's my favorite.
That's awesome. It's not often that you get a chance to play with such a great group of teammates at the high school level where so many guys are able to have that success. And again, it's just amazing when you think about your good fortune to be placed in that situation and just to be able to have that opportunity. And it makes me, and I'm sure you've thought about it before, and it makes me think about what if that hadn't, you know, that path hadn't opened for you. I get the sense from just talking to you in this brief amount of time that we've known each other here that even if you hadn't fallen into an ideal situation. I get the feeling that you would have found your way to an ideal situation somehow, some way, just because of the positive outlook that you have.
Well, thank you. But you know, I do some speaking. I know we're going to get into that later, but I always say opportunities, they come by all the time for everybody. And that means nothing. It's the outcome that really matters. And I knew that was special, and I felt that it was special. And the outcome from that, the friendships, the ability to get a secondary post education, the ability to play on the national team, the ability to have Coach Walton still there. You know, like I said, I talk to him every single week. My girlfriend works with him. He's a university head coach in Canada, a women's program, and my girlfriend's his assistant coach. So I get to still get knowledge from him on a daily basis. So the outcome, I think, is the most important. Opportunities, they always come around, always, for everybody. It's just what you do with them that matters.
Yeah, so true. And I think it's also, if you put yourself in position to take advantage of those opportunities by working hard and being open to those opportunities, so many people you see that those opportunities come in front of them and they don't always grab them because of whatever reason, some obstacle that's in front of them they just can't see around or get over. And I think that your story indicates, just like what we've been talking about, that if you can overcome those obstacles and you don't necessarily see them as things that are in your way, but just things that you need to get over, things that you need to learn from, and then you ultimately grab onto those opportunities. As you said, opportunities continue to come if you put yourself into the right position. And speaking of opportunities, you had an opportunity to eventually play college basketball. At what point did that start to come on your radar that, one, you wanted to play college basketball, and then two, when did you come to the realization that, hey, this dream is going to be something that I'm going to be able to achieve?
Well, it's funny because it's funny you say that. My mind was never like that. It never thought about it that way. I didn't know. I had no idea. I remember I come from a European system. And this was all foreign to me, and I didn't know about it. I just played basketball because I really, really love basketball. And I didn't play basketball for any other reason but to go out there and kick guys' butts and win and do what I love. And I remember sitting in a class in grade 11, and Coach Walton came up to my class. He was also a guidance counselor, a co-op teacher, I guess, was at their school. And he came up and he gave me a letter, and it was from a university. And I remember him saying to me, you have to open this, you have to read it. It's probably about these people wanting you to play basketball at their school. And I said, cool. And I opened it. It was a super nice letter. And everybody around the class was kind of looking, and everybody knew what I opened. I had no idea what I opened. Well, it was a letter from Notre Dame University. And I had no idea. And Coach Walton knew how I was, and he understood the way my mind was working. And he never really explained anything to me. He just let me be me. He just let me play. And, you know, kept handing me letters and letters and letters, and ended up having 50 scholarship offers. And then I finally understood what that meant. And then I said, oh, wow. I can go to school for free just to play basketball. This is amazing. I'll do that. Yeah.
That's awesome. And so talk a little bit about how you ended up making your decision. You obviously reconnect with or connect for the first time with Gannon Baker there at Coastal Carolina. But just talk a little bit about the recruiting process.
Yeah. Pete Strickland was the head coach. Pete Strickland was our head coach. Gannon was the assistant. And Pete Strickland recruited me when I was at when he was at Dayton University, and I thought I was going to Dayton. I thought that was the place. I really liked Pete Strickland, and then Pete Strickland ended up getting the head job at Coastal Carolina, and then Gannon came up, and there was five schools that I narrowed it down to. It was Coastal Carolina, Florida Atlantic, Boston University, University of Maine, and Furman, and those were my schools. And I went down to Coastal on my official visit. Absolutely loved it. Loved everything about it. Loved the coaching staff. Gannon's, you guys have spoken to Gannon, you've interviewed Gannon, so you understand his personality and how he is. So I totally loved that when I walked in the gym and this guy's jumping rope in the corner listening to Rocky. And I said, I like this, right? And then I went on one more visit to Florida Atlantic, and I came back to Canada, and I told Coach Walton, Coach, I like Coastal Carolina. I just want to go there. I don't want to go on any other visits. I don't want to do any. It was getting really busy, Mike. It was getting really busy. So I ended up signing early in November of my last year of high school.
When you get there eventually, okay, so you play out your last year of high school and you make the transition from high school to college. Now you're going to another new country. So you're leaving Canada. Now you're coming to the United States. You're making the leap as a basketball player from high school to college, but you're also making the leap as a student and just as a regular human being from one environment to another. So just talk about what those adjustments were like or what you remember going from your senior year of high school into your freshman year of college.
There's a couple of things that stick out that I can talk about. And number one is when I got there, I was like, okay, well, I'm a top five player in Canada, possibly number one player in the country. And I go down there and it's going to be the same. I'm going to have five dunks a game. I'm going to play above the rim. Everybody's going to throw me the ball and I'm going to keep on playing. I knew nothing. I've never seen an NCAA game before. I didn't know anything about it. And I get there and I'm like, holy crap. Everybody is better than me or just as good as me, you know? And then you get it quick. There was seven of us, seven new guys, seven freshmen. And you know, a couple of guys our size, Anthony Shushnyara, who was one of my best friends, but we battled it out for 5 years. So it was a true wake-up call when I got there for the first pickup game. And I'm like, okay. Everybody's better than me, or everybody is just as good as me. You have some work to do, big fella. And then I started my first game in university, and I ended up playing against George Mason University, who had a 27-year-old post player. I'm 6'9", so this guy was 6'8", strong, but he's a 27-year-old ex-Marine. And I remember he just sat on me, drop-step dunked on me, and said, "Welcome to the NCAA, young fella." And I said, okay, now I got to get better. So that was on the court. But then off the court, there was a senior named Matt Gladio who was walking with me through the hallway, kind of giving me the lay of the land. And he asked me a very crazy question that I still use in my development to this day. He said, 5 years ago, would you have ever thought that you would be in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, playing basketball? I said, no. 5 years ago, I was in Romania trying to find food. I never knew this existed. And that stuck with me, fellows, because reflection is incredible. So I've been doing that since I was 19 because of Matt Gladio. And I always stop and reflect and think and look back at where I come from. And it's an amazing practice that's helped me continue to grow.
Well, I think it speaks to sometimes we get so caught up in the day-to-day of the things that we're trying to do. And that could be, again, as a basketball player, as a basketball coach, as a business person, just in our lives in general with our families. And we get so caught up in that day-to-day that sometimes we underestimate what we're able to do over the course of, if you use that 5-year period, like the quote that you just shared with us. I think sometimes we overestimate what we can get done in a day, but we underestimate what we can accomplish in 5 years. And I think your story that you just told of, here I am in Romania, barely having enough to eat, to now I'm playing basketball in the NCAA in a completely different country. It's just amazing that what can be accomplished if you just keep putting one foot in front of the other and have a positive attitude and keep looking for those opportunities like you described earlier.
Yeah, I think it's so important to live in the now and live in the present and live here, because the past is irrelevant. It never matters. You can learn from it, but you should never look back because there's nothing you can do about it. And the future is not real, doesn't exist, but your actions today dictate your future. So that's you know, being grounded in the now, in the present moment, and doing everything that you possibly can do so you can get to somewhere that you in your brain is an accomplishment, is something that you want to do, something that you want to leave a legacy for this for your lifetime, to make the world a better place. If you continuously focus on doing good things every single second of the day, then good things will always happen.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that that's something that everybody should keep in mind, and especially during the times that we're living through right now, it'd be easy to focus on some of the negative pieces of what we're all going through and we're all experiencing. And yet, I know that for myself, and I've talked to other people kind of in my circle, you kind of have to look at this time where we're all being forced to stay home, and you can use it in one of two ways. You can use it to be afraid, or you can use it to sort of go up into a shell and sit around and watch TV, or you can use it as an opportunity to grow and connect and try new things and read and try to grow. And I think that, you know, you think about what you've done in your life and what you're trying to accomplish through all the different things that you have going on right now, and that sort of epitomizes basically your philosophy. And I think it dovetails really well with what we're trying to do here with the podcast, is just, again, try to be someone who's A, learning for ourselves, but also giving other people who are out there in our audience an opportunity to learn and grow from some of the people that we've been able to have on, like yourself, to share your stories. And to me, that's just what is so powerful, is you can look at, two people can look at this exact same situation, and one person can kind of let it shut them down, and another person can say, wow, this is such a great opportunity for me to try something new or learn something new or do something different or just continue to grow. And I think that that's the story that you've told to this point is just crystal clear, that when we take advantage of opportunities, good things come our way.
100%. Well said. I mean, it's the people that are struggling right now through this, through whatever this time in history is that we're going through, are the same people that are on autopilot, the same people that wake up 5 days a week and do the same thing, that recharge on the weekend and do it again. And studies have shown, I'm sure you guys read a lot like I do, and most of them just don't want to do that, but they do it for the wrong reasons. And what happens, your life conditions decline, and you're responsible for it. So, and when you lose the ambition for your life, you lose ambition to help those around you. And when you lose ambition to help those around you, then what's the point in being around? Because we have one job, and our job is to make the world a better place. But you got to be good with yourself. And if you don't love yourself and you don't take care of your body and you don't take care of your mind, then you can't do anything else for this world. So you're just stuck on this autopilot of earning a paycheck, no matter what it looks like, and upholding some sort of life conditions that are trivial to what actually you're supposed to do on this planet.
Yeah, I love that philosophy. And I think it's something that no matter what field you end up in, and obviously we're spending a lot of our time talking to coaches, and our show is geared towards coaches, so I think this conversation clearly can apply to the why for a coach, and why do you go out, and what is it about coaching that you love? And if you're only concerned with wins and losses and what you can get out of it, then you're probably in it for the wrong reasons, and you're probably going to burn out pretty quick. But if you're in it for the right reasons, and you're in it to serve the players that are a part of your program, to serve the families of those players, to serve your assistant coaches if you're a head coach, to serve the people who are sort of the surrounding administrative people around your program, you're going to end up with a lot more life satisfaction regardless of what your one loss record is, if you're focused on just trying to, as you said, make the world a better place. And you can even narrow that down even further to just to make the people who come in contact with you better for having known you and interacted with you. And to me, that's just a powerful statement in terms of a way to live.
I'm glad you agree, man. Thank you.
No, it's awesome. It's awesome. It's great. It's great stuff. So let's apply that to your college basketball career and talk about, you told the story of getting in there and realizing, oh man, I got to get better. So other than what you did within the confines of your team practices and the things that you quote were required to do, what were some of the other things that you did or that you felt you had to do in order to raise the level of your play up to where you wanted it to be?
Well, I had to lift weights for the first time in my life. I've never lifted a weight, so I had to learn about that. I had to learn about the weight room. I had to learn about how am I going to play at 6'9", 195 pounds. It's not going to happen. So then I had to get into the weight room and learn about that. And thankfully, we had a great strength coach at the time, and he taught me all that. And I put a bunch of a good weight on that allowed me to still be athletic. And you can't get much better than having Gannon Baker as your assistant coach.
If you want somebody with energy that wants to make you better, that's a pretty good way to go.
That guy wanted to work out with us more than we wanted to work out with him, right? So it was such a perfect place to be. And then Pete Strickland, who's, you know, learned from Morgan Wooten, and I don't know if you know that whole DeMatha tree, but I mean,
absolutely. We've had Coach Jones, who's at DeMatha now. We've had him as a guest on the show.
Yeah, okay, so you understand that whole thing.
Absolutely.
So, you know, and Pete, Coach Gannon, and it's just, I mean, that those guys with skill training and the individual workouts, you had no choice but to get better. Even if you didn't want to be there, you still got better. So those were the things that I did when it came to my body and basketball. And I wish there was more knowledge back then about nutrition. I wish there was more knowledge about mindfulness and how to take care of your mind and meditation, but it just wasn't that time yet. But, you know, I tried to bring to the team what I learned in high school from Coach Wallman. That was always hanging out with the guys, always making sure we're together. If we get in trouble, let's get in trouble together. If we go work out, let's go work out together. If we go eat. So we just rolled in packs around that campus. And it was, I guess that's why we still talk to this day. That's why to this day we still have group chats. And to this day we still share happy moments and ask for advice and help each other out. And we built this amazing camaraderie that nobody knows how many points you scored. Nobody knows how many rebounds you got. Nobody knows any of that. But we know the man and we know the principles and we know the character. And it's easy to reach out for anything to my former teammates. And nothing's changed in, you know, 20 years removed from that.
Do you attribute that to you guys as players, as teammates, or do you attribute that to what the coaching staff was able to do to foster that, or was it a little bit of a combination of both?
Yeah, I think it's a combination. I mean, Coach Strickland was pretty clear about what type of players he was recruiting, and he wanted guys that can play, of course, but he was always a character first guy, always a character first guy. So he did a great job putting the package together, bringing the right guys in, and then we obviously clicked. We were in the perfect environment. And yeah, I think it's a combination of both, Mike.
All right. So you mentioned nutrition, you mentioned mindfulness, you mentioned that you wish there was more knowledge out there about some of those things. And when you said that, that took me back to the time when I was playing in college. And I have some of those same feelings that you just shared about nutrition and just the way that we went about things and how things were different. So just to give you a couple of examples, for us, we would always eat every single pregame meal. We would still eat steak every single pregame meal before we played. And I mean, I played in from 1988 to 92. And clearly by that point, there wasn't a whole lot of nutrition knowledge out there, but certainly it was known by that point that probably steak wasn't the best thing to eat. And I was lucky. I always had a stomach that I could play on pretty much anything except for pizza. So it ended up being okay for me, but still you just think back to that. You're like, gosh, how did we not, how did the coaching staff not know that? It's just kind of interesting.
Mike lives on peanut butter and jelly. So, you know,
yeah, okay. I live on peanut butter and jelly now. It's my lunch every day. So it's been my lunch since the time I was like probably 7 or 8 years old. That's what my mom would pack for me every day. And just never felt the need to change it. And then the other thing when I was at school that we would do is, so we would practice our practices, especially in the preseason. We would have our 5 days a week during the school week, and then on Saturday morning we'd get up at 7 a.m. and we'd have, I don't know, probably an hour and a half regular practice, and then we'd do like a 2-hour inter-squad scrimmage. and then we'd have the rest of the day off, and then we'd have Sunday was our off day. And so we would immediately get done with this 3.5 hour practice / scrimmage on Saturday morning. So it'd be like 10:30 in the morning, and we would go from showering in the locker room, we would go straight to Ponderosa and the old buffet. And we would just literally, I mean, that place had to lose so much money on the basketball team going and sitting in this Ponderosa and just eating just, I'm sure, the worst. You know, I just think about the food we're eating, the chicken wings. And I, you know, I was probably drinking a half gallon of soda and all these different things. And it was just, you just didn't, I mean, you probably should have known better, but at that point there was nobody, there was no adults talking to you about those things. And it just kind of struck a chord with me when you were talking about wishing you had had that knowledge that players have access to and coaches have access to today that you didn't have access to, and neither did I when I was playing.
Oh, and it's incredible. And you know, my partner, my girlfriend, she played Division I basketball. She played at Fairfield. In her third year, she was just immobilized. She was in bed. She couldn't get out of bed. She ended up being diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis. And there was nothing that they could do for her except an injection. So after months and months of figuring out what it was, it was an injection. And then 3 years ago, she said, I don't want to take the injection anymore. And I said, well, what can we do? It was a 2-week injection. Every 2 weeks she had to inject. And we did research, and we've been 3 years now vegan, fully vegan, fully natural products that we use. And guess what? She's 2 years medication-free, inflammation-free, pain-free, and she feels better than she did when she played in college. So the diet fixed autoimmune disease on her. And I'm 40, but I feel like I'm 18. And this is the times when I'm like, man, I wish I knew that when I was 19, 20, 21. But it just wasn't out there. The knowledge wasn't there, you know. But yeah, Mike, I agree. It's such a huge impact on an athlete to eat the right way and understand their body. I'm not saying vegan works for everybody. I'm not saying any diet works for anybody, but understanding your body will give you a lot more than you do if you just go through the motions. Just like anything, though.
Oh, absolutely. I think if you understand yourself and understand what it is that makes you function well, I think that is a huge part of it. It's interesting, you being a vegan. My wife was not a vegetarian her entire life, but probably started as a vegetarian in her, I'd say, early 20s. And so I have three kids, and all three of my kids have been vegetarian from the time they were born, have never eaten any meat whatsoever the entire time that they've been alive. And I always tell people, I am not a vegetarian, but I'm a home vegetarian. So I don't eat any meat at home, which basically means that if I go out to eat once or twice a week, I might have a chicken sandwich or something like that. But certainly I feel like I eat much healthier than I did when I was younger. I grew up in a household where we had some kind of meat every single meal. It just was, that's just the way you ate. And I just think about now how much better, healthier. And I haven't been able to completely take the plunge. I probably should. My wife and my kids are always kind of on me that, you know, hey, Dad, why you got to eat that chicken sandwich? But
nonetheless, your choice, man. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. So, I mean, it's just, but I do feel that their choices and my wife's choices, it's been interesting with my kids just to see them and just sort of how, again, healthy they are, how they feel. And then also, it's interesting for them from a cultural standpoint when they go to school and kids obviously have questions and, you know, they're always like, you guys have never eaten any meat before and any of those things. And it's just, you can now have a solid reason. It's interesting as my kids get older. So I have a junior in high school and a son who's going to be, he's in eighth grade now, he'll be in ninth grade next year. And just as they become more educated about sort of the health benefits and the environmental benefits of being vegetarian and just how they're now able to answer questions that other people have for them about why it's, you know, why they do it.
Just right. Hope you don't end up at a Sbarro without cheese, right, Mike?
There you go. That's true. That is true. That is true. Jason and I and my son, we drove out to Snow Valley Basketball School in Iowa.
Okay.
And so when you're on the road and you're stopping at different places, you have, as you know, I'm sure, you have much more limited options in terms of the type of food that you can find. And so we were trying to find somewhere where my son could find some food when we were on the road. And we pulled into the Sbarro, and they didn't have any pizza that was just cheese pizza. They only had, you know, they only had pepperoni or sausage. And so my son nearly didn't get to, I don't even remember, Jason, what we ended up getting for him.
And I'm pretty sure we got chips at the convenience store and he ate those. I'm pretty sure that was what we did. The real healthy, that was really healthy.
Yeah. So we're probably not on the same level, unfortunately, as you are in terms of that health, the healthy eating, but we do pretty well at my house.
Yeah. I mean, everybody's got to do it their own way. You just got to understand it. You know, and by any means, I'm not a nutritionist, and everybody asks me questions about it. And I always say, you got to figure out your body, just like you got to figure out your sleep. Everybody says, oh, 5 a.m. club. Well, hang on. We all have our own circadian rhythms. We all operate differently. There's four different kinds. Figure out which one works for you. You might be a late sleeper. Don't force it, right? So there's no formula that works for everybody. You just got to figure it out.
No question. At what point during your playing career do you start to think that maybe some type of coaching might be in your future?
Never did during my playing career, to be honest. I never thought about it. I just finished playing in 2004. I sat out my third year because I got hurt and I redshirted, and then I finished in 2004. And I got married very young at that age, and never really thought about coaching or playing. I dabbled a little bit into the professional leagues. My good friend Mike Taylor was coaching in Germany at the time. Well, he wasn't a good friend then, he was a coach, but now he's become a good friend, and he offered me a place to go play for him in Germany, but I ended up breaking my ankle, and that never panned out, and I just went into the working force, and I never thought about coaching. And I can go into how I became a coach if you want me to.
Absolutely.
I moved back to Canada, and I don't know what to do. I had 2 degrees. I had a degree in business marketing and a degree in business management. And when I lived in Myrtle Beach, I worked for Xerox. And I hated it. I hated the suit. I hated the tie. I hated the sales part of it. I just hated it all. And came back to Canada, and Coach Walton to the rescue. He was retired, and he said, "Hey, what are you doing?" I said, "I don't know. I don't know what I want to do." And he said, "You want me to teach you how to build decks and fences?" And I said, "Yeah. I never built anything in my life. I want to learn." So he paid me for a whole summer. I was driving about 70 kilometers each day to meet him and work, and he was paying me $10 an hour to learn. And I was learning and learning. And I started my own deck and fence company. I started building decks and fences, and I was loving it. At some point in time, I said, there's got to be more to this. There's got to be more to life than this. And in 2007, end of 2006, I was 26 years old. A guy I was playing basketball with said, "Hey, well, actually, you want to play with us in a tournament?" I said, "Sure, I'll play." Didn't know any of the guys. Didn't know anybody on the team. And they all showed up. Half of them showed up to the Sunday game in suits. And I said, "Oh, where are you guys coming from?" Silly me. I'm asking if they're coming from church. And they said, No, you don't know what team you're on." I said, "I have no idea. This guy asked me to play, so I'm playing. I don't know. I don't know who you guys are." "Oh, this is all cops. We're a police team." And I said, "Oh, cool." And they're like, "Do you want to be a cop?" I go, "Well, I don't know where I come from. No, like where I grew up. No, I don't want to be a cop. Those are the bad guys. Those are the bad people." And anyway, I learned more about it, and I applied, and I got hired at 27 to be a police officer. And once I got hired, a guy that he was a police officer as well, said, "Hey, you played high-level basketball." I said, "Yeah." He goes, "I have a kid in grade 7. Do you want to teach him?" I said, sure. Yeah, I can teach him. So I showed up in his driveway. I had like, I did what I saw my coaches do. I wrote out a practice plan. I printed out the piece of paper. I had it by times, you know, the normal practice thing. I
right.
had it tucked in, folded, put in my shorts, half of it sticking out. You guys yep. know the look.
Oh, I know exactly the look. Absolutely. I've been there.
Yeah. So I show up in this kid's driveway. Some neighbors are trying to walk their dog across the driveway. I kick him off the driveway. I says, this is our space. We're working out. And that's how it started. And the kid bought in. And the kid got better. And then his teammates wanted to get better. And then his team wanted to get better. And then I said, hang on. I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know. I can't do this. Like, I'm not that good. I need somebody to mentor me. And that's when I called G-Bake, Gannon. I called G-Bake and I said, hey man, I know you've been doing the shake and bake and you've been doing your thing for about 4 or 5 years. I need some help. This is what's happening here. And he said, I got you, big fella. Send me a box of DVDs. And he said, start studying this stuff, start learning it. Start doing it, start applying it. And next thing led to another, and it's 2012. I'm 4 years into this skill training. I'm still a cop. I'm a detective. I've become a street crime unit detective. I was taking people's drugs and kicking in their doors and taking their money and buying drugs and teaching young kids how to play basketball. And it got to the point where one of my mentors was a deputy chief of police at the time, and we had lunch and he said, listen, you can't do both. It's not conducive to your lifestyle. What if I told you that you can take a year off without pay, go do the basketball thing, and if you don't like it, you have your job back. If you like it, you can make a decision. I haven't looked back. I took a buyout a year later. I retired from police work, and off I went. And that's when I joined Gannon's. He had a. It's the mentorship group that we have now, but it looked right. a bit different at the time. And I joined as part of his whole team, and we had a great team of people. And I just kept getting better and better and better. And once I dedicated myself fully to learning every single day from 2008 till now, I'm still learning every single day. Good things happen.
What did that learning process look like for you? So what were you doing to improve your craft as a coach? Was that, again, watching DVDs, watching game film of certain players, going out and going to clinics, working personally one-on-one with Gannon or other coaches that were part of the group at the time? What did the improvement process look like for you?
Yeah, 100%. I never believed in watching film. My high school coach was, and he still is to this day, he coaches university, and he's always, let's worry about what we do. Don't worry about the rest. He doesn't scout. He doesn't watch the other team. He just goes and beats on people because they do what they do. So I had to learn about that. But yeah, the process was watching Gannon demonstrate, and then, you know, calling Coach Strickland and calling Coach Walton, and then going to watch some local games of higher level, like universities, going to watch some Final Fours, just starting to learn. 2014, I went to my first Final Four, and I've been hooked ever since. This is the first year I missed one, obviously. And I went to follow Gannon. I said, Gannon, where are you? What are you doing? I'm coming. So I would drive down to Ohio, drive down to Florida to take his coaching class. And I took his coaching class like 3 times. And, as the internet developed, taking online courses and watching people and doing it. And it turned into me just getting more knowledge that I can pass on to these players. And I wish that the first players that I was training in 2008 had the brain that I have now, because they would have been better off. But that was just the reality. I was just doing everything I could to get them better then, but I wasn't as knowledgeable as I am now. And I'm sure I'll look back to today, 10 years from now, and I'll say the same thing.
Understood. All right. So that takes care of the basketball side of it. how did you go about learning and understanding and building the business side of your training? Because obviously the basketball is a part of it, but in order for you to make a living at it, you also have to be well-versed in the business side of it. So talk a little bit about how you developed that part of your coaching.
Yeah, I mean, it was a growth process. At first, like I told you, it was in a driveway, and then when more kids, when winter time showed up, right, in Canada, we get pretty bad winters, and then I said, I got to go into a gym. And
you didn't just shovel?
It's just, people just do that for the Instagram, man. Come on. No, it's just, right, but that's how it starts, and I remember having parking lot beers. I'll never forget this. After Friday night men's league with my buddies, we're having parking lot beers, and I'm saying, guys, this is, kids want to learn from me. There's 2-3 guys, so I'm going to do more of this. I want to do more. I want to help more kids. And they're like, and you're going to charge them? But they're all like basketball coaches, teachers. And I go, yeah, I'm going to charge. They're like, it's never going to work. And nobody's going to pay for that. So this is a huge lesson I give to people on fear, because if I would have let that fear get into my mind and the doubt and say, you know what, these guys are right. They know. They're from the area. They know what's going on. They understand the game of basketball. And I could have just simply not done it. But I said, you know what, fellas, I'm going to do it anyway. So one of the guys was the athletic director at a local college. And I said, hey, I got to get in here. And he said, well, you can't. I said, okay, well, let's look at the schedule. Anyway, one thing led to another. I was using the gym when nobody else was. I was buying the security guards, coffee gift cards for the Tim Hortons here. And I would give them to them every week. And they would let me in the gym. They thought I belonged. So I snuck in this gym for about 2 years and worked out people, sending out emails. And then, you know, it progresses with business. I have a good business mind. And then you progress to online registration. In 2010, I created my own. And then when I finished from police work, I said, well, I need a hub. I need a place. I happened to stumble upon this half-court gym that was in a commercial building, a state-of-the-art facility, but just half-court. And I rented it. And I rented it for about 4 years. And that's where I grew everything. I mean, that's where I started getting influxes of people from different cities coming in, flying in from Europe to train with me to stay for a month or two. It just became a hub of basketball for anybody, national team players, NBA players. It just became a real cool place to hang out. I hired and I partnered up with a strength and conditioning coach who also had a gym inside there with me, and we were just hitting everybody. His wife was a meditation guru. So when somebody would come in, we'd hit them with basketball, strength and conditioning, movement, and mindfulness. And it was the whole package. And it was absolutely, that's where the business started blooming.
All right, two questions. One from the very beginning of when you started, and then one from the end. So let's go with the question at the beginning first.
Am I talking too much, baby?
No, you are absolutely.
Give you more pause? Or?
No, you are absolutely not talking too much. People want to hear you. They don't want to hear me. They want to hear your story. They don't want to hear mine. So you're doing a great job.
Thanks.
So my question, going back from the beginning of your business, was when you first decided, okay, your friend asks you to work with, you know, with their kid, and all right, you're working with them. And then you get to the point where you're like, okay, this is a business. I'm going to start charging people. Did you, when you first started charging people, because this is something that I went through, I used to coach at the high school level. And then when I stopped coaching at the high school level, then I started doing some training. And I used to, when I first started, people would call me up and they'd say, hey, I want to train with you. And I'd kind of be like, well, you know, they'd be, how much does it cost? And I'd say, well, it's $50 an hour. And I would kind of feel almost guilty about it at the beginning, charging people. And then I quickly got over that within like a month or two. And I had so many people calling me. I'm like, look, if you don't want to pay what my going rate is, there's going to be somebody else who will. So did you kind of go through that same process, or were you kind of just, or did you just go right from the start and understand that if this was going to be my livelihood, I had to charge, and you just kind of went forward from there?
Yeah, my grandpa, my grandpa that died after I left, he told me, if you offer anything for free to people in life, and he was a great businessman, if you offer anything to people for free, then you have no value. Don't take anything for free ever, because that person has no value. Why would they give anything for free? So from day one in 2008, August 31st, I still have the first practice plan. I can send it to you.
That's awesome.
I charged $30 an hour. And that kid, even when my rates went up to $60 an hour, he was still paying 30, because that's the loyalty, you know. And then I charged from day one. I set the standard, and I haven't stopped charging.
That's awesome. All right, from the end, or from the time at, once you had the business built and you were in your half-court facility, how many hours a day were you on the floor training, you know, per every day? How much were you out there on the court working with kids?
During the school year, I was on there. Kids would come in 5 a.m., 6 a.m., 7 a.m. Then they go to school. Then I would just work on myself, work on my body, work on business side of things, and then they'd come back in. Some kids would come in at like 2:30, and I'd be there till 10. And then summertime, it was 5 a.m. until 10 p.m. nonstop workouts, and I loved it. I loved every minute of it.
What's your favorite part of the training process? If you had to point to one thing that when that alarm goes off at 4 in the morning or 4:30 in the morning, you know you're going to be at the gym at 5 a.m. What is it that just, man, it gets you can't wait to get out of bed to get in, and get to the gym and start working?
Impact. Just my ability to impact. That's one of my top five things in my life that I cherish. And I always have five things that I look at: the ability to impact, the ability to go out there and help change this kid's game, or help change this kid's life, help change this kid's outlook on what they need to do, help them figure out what they're good at, help them figure out that, you know, maybe they're a rebounder, maybe they're a hustle player, maybe they're a good screen setter, maybe they're a good passer, you know, telling them the truth and helping them find the truth and then helping them develop that. And then, of course, the impact on life that I have through my life experiences. That's how my whole talking and leadership and mentorship stuff started, on the court with kids. Some kids would come in and, you know, they sit there and talk for an hour. And sometimes the parents would say, "Can you talk to my kid? No basketball today." And that's why I do it.
All right. So let's transition into that and talk a little bit about some of the things that you're doing, that you're continuing to do today with the leadership and the character piece of it and your speaking. And then we can also get into what your role is and what you're still doing with Gannon in terms of being his manager of business development. So maybe talk a little bit about each one of those things, and then we can dive into them a little further.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's all the same wheelhouse. Nothing's different. It's all sports and impact and leadership. And my leadership series started on the court, and started with me talking to kids, and the kids, they athletes, and they coined them Mihai Talks. And, you know, to this day, every day, there's messages that I answer from all over the world with players that I impact, and they call them Mihai Talks, about the mindset and about approaching life and approaching having this, you know, what we talked about at the beginning, that opportunities are just that. And what are you going to do about it? How are you going to do it? And what are some actionable items? And everybody's got different things to deal with. And then different schools, because kids would go back and would write papers. Mihai's my role model. And then somebody would get a hold of it. And the next thing you know, the principal's calling me and say, "Hey, can you come speak to my school? And we want to hear your story." And at first, it was in its infancy that I would really just go and tell my story. And then I said, "Well, they can't do anything with my story. Like, it's just my story. There's no actionable items. There's no, they might be pumped up and they might jump through a wall for 5 minutes. And then what happens after?" So then I started developing my entire, you know, talks and leadership to give these kids things that they can take and work on themselves, things that they can hear my story, hear my example, and then they can go and apply. So one thing led to another, and you know, now I'm doing a program called Leadership Through Sport, which in conjunction with the Ministry of Education here and Urban Priority High Schools, I'm doing it in Hamilton, Ontario, Canada. And it's a program that's really, it's for students to foster that positive development and their well-being, but challenging them and helping them acquire the right set of skills and experiences and relationships that enables them to develop into successful and contributing adults to our society. Because if you can't show them that they can all achieve some sort of level of excellence by learning and opening themselves up to a world that's currently unknown to them, maybe, it's just going to foster, like, if you do that, it's going to just foster their well-being and personal growth. And that's the focus with these Leadership Through Sport. And I do that for university programs. I do that, you know, for some corporate programs. And it works. I mean, because it's 2020 and we don't have management anymore. Management doesn't work. Single leadership doesn't work. It's group leadership. Everybody has to lead together. And that's my focus with that type of, you know, mission, or I guess side of the business, if you want to call it.
All right. I'm curious about your process for putting this whole thing together. So when you talked about your knee-high talks that you're having with players out on the court, were those things that were just in your mind, and then as you started to put together Leadership Through Sport, did you have to, for lack of a better word, formalize and take those talks and put them into, get them down on paper and put them into a coherent plan as part of your process? So did you go from something that was just in your mind that you could recall as you're talking to players and you're out on the court and you're just sharing your experiences, and then as you're putting together your speaking series and trying to have a greater impact, did you find that you had to go through those stories and kind of curate them and put them into a package that you could then be able to better share with the variety of different groups and kids that you're talking to, you know, through your speaker series that way?
100%. And Mike, Jason, I didn't figure this out on my own. You know, I'll be the first one to always admit that. It was just the talks. It was just off the top of the head. It was just dealing and catering to that individual that was in front of me at the time. And then when I was going into a group setting and speaking to a group, it was engaging and it was good. And then I said exactly what you just said. I need to be better. I need to get better. How the heck can I get better at this? I know which basketball coach to call, but I don't know what to do. And I ended up through mutual friends meeting a business development, incredible, awesome woman that's, you know, she also, I can't really say what she does because this is a, it's kind of conflict of interest for her. So I'm just going to leave that out. But she helps me, and she came and she watched me speak and she watched me deliver. And she, I did a Ontario Youth Leadership Conference, which is, you know, 2,500 students. And she came and watched that. And I rocked it. It was cheering. There was high fiving. And I'm like, how awesome was that? And she said, not so awesome. I said, okay, cool. Thanks. And then she said, here's my notes, and this is what you got to do, and this is how you got to approach it. And from then, every time I went out and did a speech, she came and watched, and we filmed. It's like watching game film. And then you get better, and you organize it, and you categorize it. So now there's like it's a template almost of things that I want to touch on. So, there's a theme. I always start with the top five things that you love about yourself, that you love in your life. And then you move on to knowledge, being free, and you keep on moving down. But the stories that I share and the facilitating questions to the group, they always change based on the group that I'm speaking to. But I have my staple that I like to go through. I have my eight very, very defined themes that are part of my core, my character, my entire personality, and my principles of living life the way I do. So I always am able to relate back to those and develop my speeches from that.
All right, let's go back to your 5-year rule from earlier. Would you have ever thought 5 years ago that you would be on the speaking circuit?
No, never. Never would I have thought that. Never, never, ever.
It's cool that I think when you talk about public speaking, it's something that so many people in our society are afraid of. I know there's that famous, I don't know if it's a study or just quote or thing that you hear that, you know, people are more afraid of death than they are, or people are more afraid of public speaking than they are of dying in some cases, if you get these statistics. And it's always been one of those things that's amazing to me. And I think as a coach or someone who's a teacher, you know, your entire life is spent talking in front of people. And whether that's a group of kids on the basketball court or whether that's a group of kids in a classroom. And so I always think that one of the things that I've always enjoyed is the ability to get out and talk to people, whether that's on the basketball floor. Or I've done some workshops for the Positive Coaching Alliance. And I think one of the things that is really powerful about being able to speak in front of large groups is the impact that you described earlier of being able to work with, let's say, a player one-on-one or a small group of basketball players, but then you can take through speaking and be able to multiply that impact in front of a large group. And if you really work on your process, like it sounds like you've been able to do, and really hone it down to where you can be a skilled public speaker. To me, it's such a valuable skill. And it's not just a valuable skill if you want to be a public speaker as a profession or as a job, or it's just such a valuable skill. I think if we could teach all kids to be able to be comfortable speaking in front of a group, our world would be a much better place.
I agree. I agree. I fully agree. And I haven't pushed, I haven't marketed, I haven't done anything that's come to me, anything that's come out of the leadership and the mentorship speaking, it's just come to me. I haven't sought it out because I'm really focused since February 2017. I'm just focused on helping Gannon, reshape his business and get to where we are today with it. And that takes up a lot of my time and a lot of my energy. And it's such an awesome thing to do, to be able to work with one of my mentors and who's become one of my best friends, and we have so much fun doing it, and we do it in a completely different way than any, you know, books write about the way we do things. And that's taken up probably, 85% to 95% of my time on a monthly basis. But the speaking just comes. It just, you get an email or you get a call or you get somebody, hey, I heard about you, can you come in? And they're okay because they take an hour or take a couple hours out of your day, and you go and you impact, and you have a positive impact on the athletes or the students or the under urban priority kids or whoever it is. And it's fun to do.
That's great stuff. Let's talk about what you're doing for Gannon in terms of your role. What are you doing day to day? And then talk a little bit about the vision of what the two of you guys are trying to do in order to reshape his business and have that greater impact that I know is important to you and clearly is important to Gannon as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's the vision is simple. The vision is to mentor and lead coaches and provide value to any coach out there in the world. It doesn't matter if they're a grassroots coach, it doesn't matter if they're a high school coach, an AAU coach, a university coach, an NBA coach. The mission is to provide value, mentorship, and anything that they can use to be a better coach. And that's been the mission. When I took over, we sat down and I said, well, okay, why do you want me here? If you're my mentor, you're I'm supposed to learn from you. But Gannon realized, as any great leaders realize, he knew that business wasn't his strong suit, and he knew me well enough to know that it's mine. And when we sat down in Florida, and he flew me and my girlfriend down, and we sat there, and I agreed. I said, I got to take over fully for at least a year. I got to strip you of any decision making. I gotta learn everything that goes into your business, and let's shape it up. And we've done a great job. I mean, we have everything centered around the curriculum. And I don't want to repeat anything that Gannon told you on the podcast. So stop me if I get too deep into it. But it's a curriculum, and we created a systematic online comprehensive curriculum. It's 1,200 videos that we split up into various sections, various level. If you've never played ball or never coached ball and you have zero experience, you can start at the first video. And you can go as high as you can develop. You know, hopefully, you know, you can get to the pro high level, but the reality is most don't. So it's focused around developing. The way we filmed it with a double teaching method, meaning that the Gannon demonstrates, then he teaches the coach how to instruct. And then he has live players that are appropriate skill set for the drill and the part of the curriculum that they belong in. So that's the main product. And then off of that, at each level, you can obtain a certification. So we have a Gannon Baker certification now. First three levels can be obtained online. The master level, you got to spend some time with Gannon, either live in Florida or through some Zoom calls, video calls with him. And we have a free mentorship program, which we launched about 8 to 10 months ago, and that's grown. We have 1,000 coaches in there, and there's resources for them. We're revamping that whole portal so we can offer better information, searchable information, and that's happening right now as we speak, actually. And that's where we have Zoom calls monthly. Right now it's weekly because of the situation we're in, and people are looking forward to it. And obviously, Gannon still does on-court training for players. Gannon, you know, we still have players fly in to train with him. And also, throughout all this, I was able to help Gannon and open up a company in China. And you know, we've again found these partners in China, and I brokered the deal, and I went, me and my girlfriend went to Beijing, and we lived there for 2 months to get this company started and get it going. And now we have a coaching education company in China. So, you know, I was able to put his basketball vision into a real actual business instead of trading time for money. Actually, in a business, it's always solve a problem, and the problem is coaches need resources, coaches need information, coaches need mentorship, and they need all of this in an organized manner. And that's what we've done.
All right, so what I want to know is, on the video side of it, how long is the process for putting together that entire curriculum from the moment that the idea is hatched and you start putting together what it's going to look like and the videos? How long is that process? What does it look like in terms of the time commitment and what you guys put into it?
If you have a good team like we do, a year. It took us a whole year. It took us a whole year from the moment that we mentioned the word curriculum. And don't forget, Gannon had an existing book. Like, he had a curriculum, you know, that he put together over the years. So from the time we said, hey, it's got to be like this, otherwise it's just, you might as well just have another YouTube channel, another Instagram account where you just throw random drills up. It's got to be like this. This is the research that we've done, and it's got to end up looking like this. And Gannon was huge on making sure that it reads like a book, you know, introduction, boom, boom, boom. It all makes sense. And we started putting it together. It took us about a month to put the whole curriculum on paper. Took us 10 days, 16-hour days. This is not a joke. 10 days, 16-hour days to film it. But thankfully, we have, I believe, it's the greatest video guy in the world. A kid I used to train, a kid that I mentor in his business, a kid that's, he's a young kid and he's just done a great job with his business. I actually talked him into dropping out of university so he can continue his dream, and he's done that, and he's really successful. But and then editing, and then finding the right medium to host it on that's user friendly, and then creating that channel. And then obviously putting the marketing behind it and everything. It took a whole year to do that.
Yeah, I can relate to that. I did a much smaller scale version of what you guys did and filmed, I don't know, probably filmed maybe 120 videos, 130 videos of different drills and things. And just, it took a long time to do it, both from a filming standpoint, and then, as you said, from an editing standpoint, and then trying to figure out what format you put it into so that it was easily consumable. And so I can completely understand, you guys, I'm sure, did it bigger and better and had all those things together much more than what I did. I did it on a much smaller scale, but I can definitely relate to what I'm sure you guys went through in terms of the preparation and just the effort that it took to put all that stuff together. And I know I've had a chance to look at some of Gannon's stuff that's part of the curriculum. And for coaches that are out there, if you're looking for a great resource for ways to, whether you're a high school coach and you're trying to work on the player development side of your program, or you're a trainer out there that just wants to be able to learn from one of the best and probably the original basketball trainer out there, I think you definitely want to take a look at what Mihai and Gannon have put together, because it's really good. It's really good stuff that can help you to grow as a coach, or if you're a player and you want to get it and work on the skills and be able to work with Gannon virtually. I think it's a great way to be able to do that. And as we've referenced a few times here, the enthusiasm that Gannon brings to anything that he does, he might be the most enthusiastic person that I've ever had on the podcast. Just everything that he touches, he's enthusiastic about. And I think that comes across in anything he does.
I fully agree. Thank you for saying all that. And yeah, and we're not done. I mean, we're just getting started, and the products are, he's continuously producing more stuff under our guidance, and our team's grown. We have a big team of 10 people that's working together. And Gannon, I make my job right now is to make sure that Gannon does not, probably for the past, I'd say, year, a good year, my constant words to him are just keep doing what you're doing. Don't go rogue. Just keep listening to me. he's a genius. I've never seen anybody know basketball the way he does. So you know, we're doing research, and we know what people want, what coaches want, and what coaches are after. And yes, basketball is great, and yes, we don't do X and O's, and we don't do those things. But what you get from the curriculum and every product that we're creating right now for Grant Gannon is just life changing for the coach, or material for you to grab and change your players' lives. And that's what we do. And the way we do it, I got to tell you guys, we always joke, but you talked about the energy and you talked about what he brings, and you hear how I am. This is how I am. This is how I talk. I'm very even. I'm very calculated. I think things through, and that's just why we match. But, you know, we're in two different countries. Sometimes he's in China. Sometimes I'm here. Sometimes I'm in Europe. I started a camp in Europe with a bunch of friends of mine in Lithuania in 2014. So sometimes I'm there. Sometimes it doesn't matter where we are, but we communicate via voice notes like nobody else. And we get things done. And you know why we get things done? It's because we both have attention to detail, because we always are able to tell each other the truth. We're always able to get on each other, but there's no feelings involved. We're always able to hold each other accountable and admit to things that we might be stepping out of line for. And the one thing that, you know, if this is advice for coaches or advice for skilled trainers or advice for anybody that's listening, if you have any type of business and, you know, running a high school team, it's essentially a business. You have to stick to your vision. And we've done that really, really well. Stuck to our vision and mission statement every single day. And our routine produces our results. And that's one thing I learned from Gannon as a player when I was 19 years old. And it still holds true to this day. Your routine will produce results. If you want to produce anything of value, you have to be consistent in your self-discipline. You have to be consistently taking care of your body and your mind to stay sharp, wise, healthy, passionate, energetic, you know, strong. Everything that goes into anything that you do. If you don't do that, nothing is going to be worth doing. Everything you do is not going to be as good as it can be, and it's going to expire sooner or later.
So true. All right, I want to finish up by asking you one question. I don't know if you can or can't share anything that you guys are currently in the process of developing. Is there anything on the horizon that you can share with us, something that we can look for that's going to be coming out soon, or is it too early in the development stages?
No. We can share with you. Indeed, yeah, we can share. We have a master class that's coming up in about, I'd say, 10 days, May 8th. I don't know how many days away is that, but we have a big master class coming up. From that master class that Gannon's holding for the coaches, we're going to have three amazing products. And one of them is dealing with how to motivate a player, how to break down a player's strengths, weaknesses, how to make him or her understand what those are by watching their favorite player, maybe, and then how you create a workout regimen for that player to succeed in your program. So that's one thing we're creating, and it's going to be awesome. The second thing is going to be dealing with the emotional piece of the game, which you both know it's huge. And anybody that's listening, if you're not paying attention to that and you think that dribbling through cones and, you know, getting shots up, it's all it takes, you're wrong.
So no
we're, doubt. We're developing Gannon's Work Hard. I can't tell you who's involved, but there's two guys that you would love to see on there. They're going to be awesome. And they actually, the content's already done. Our video crew is just putting it together. So that's the second product. And then the third product is, because of the times that we're in right now, is a at-home workout. And Gannon goes from, you know, the way you know, the John Wooden, how you put your shoes on kind of thing, how you start a workout and how you build your workout and things that you can do at home in your driveway with the hoop, without a hoop. How you can take care of your workout routine and still get better. Because the biggest thing that's happening, I'm sure you see it, and I'm sure you hear it, and I'm sure you run into it in your travels, is your digital travels, is players are not getting better right now because they're doing, you know, group Zoom classes and they're doing all. Everybody's going to become a ball handling expert after this virus is gone, and coaches are voicing that. So we wanted to put something out there that actually helps a player be better. Actually, put something out that a coach can help a player get better virtually, and also something for the players and coaches to deal approach their emotional side of things.
I'm sure that's going to be incredibly valuable, because I think as we sit here today, we're recording on April 29th, none of us have any idea how long this is going to be, and it seems like it could be a lot longer than any of us are certainly hoping for. And so it's important for players to be able to have opportunities to continue to grow and improve, and for coaches to be able to have things that they can share with players to help their players get better and to continue their program to, as you said, give kids an opportunity to improve and get better. And so I know, based on the quality of what the products and things that you guys have out there now, that I'm sure all three of those things that you mentioned are going to be incredibly valuable for coaches. I want to wrap up, Mihai, by just giving you a chance to share how people can connect directly with you, how they can find out more about what you just described with Gannon. And then if there's any final point that you want to make before we finish, you can go ahead and do that. And then I'll jump back in and wrap up the episode.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, this is great. This is you know, you guys are true professionals, so I appreciate you guys having me on. But if you want to get a hold of me, it's very easy. You know, my phone number, you can text 905-651-5086. You can email me, mihai@gannonbakerbasketball.com, mihai@gannonbakerbasketball.com. I have Instagram, I have social media. If you type in my name, Mihai Raducanu, there's no others around, so just you'll find me. And I'm open to anybody reaching out. I'm open to giving advice on anything that you find that I can help you with. And everything about Gannon and everything that we're doing with the coaching mentorship and with the curriculum and development is just GannonBakerBasketball.com. Lots of information on there for you. And again, you can just email me and ask me any more questions that you have. And that's basically it. But listen, before you wrap it up, Mike, Jason, I really appreciate you guys having me on. I really appreciate the opportunity to spread my story, and hopefully it impacts somebody along the way. And if it impacts one person or one aspect of this helps somebody, we've done our job, and you guys have been true professional. Thank you for communicating everything clearly to me, and keep doing what you're doing, fellas.
Well, thank you for the kind words. We really do appreciate it. We feel like we've had so much fun and worked very hard to try to put these things together and make the podcast hopefully valuable to have the same kind of impact like you described. That's what we hope the podcast has done from the beginning and continues to do as our audience grows. And again, I can't thank you enough personally for jumping on and spending almost an hour and 30 minutes with us tonight. It's been a pleasure getting to know you, getting to know a little bit more about your philosophy, getting to know a little bit about the role that you play in Gannon's business and helping him to be successful with what you guys are trying to build together. And I really, really do appreciate your time. I don't take it lightly, the fact that people who have been our guests, including yourself, that they take time out of their schedule to share not only with us, but also with our audience here on the Hoopheads podcast. So thank you. And to everyone out there who's listening, we really appreciate it. And we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Coaches, we've teamed up with Coach Tyler Whitcomb so you can now purchase his exclusive new playbooks right from the Hoopheads Pod website. If you're looking for ways to improve your team next season, these playbooks blend affordability with the quality content that serious coaches are looking for. Just visit hoopheadspod.com/store and you'll find playbooks from John Calipari of Kentucky, Leonard Hamilton from Florida State, and Mike Young of Virginia Tech. Check out these great resources at hoopheadspod.com/store.
Hey everyone, last year at the Junior NBA Summit, I came across an amazing company called iSport 360 and its founder, Ian Goldberg. Their youth sports app gets coaches, players, and parents on the same page. Your team can set goals, share player feedback, training videos, sticker rewards, player evals, and practice assignments. All of this to foster a healthy team communication and culture. If your team or club struggles to keep open lines of communication, especially among team parents, iSport 360 can help. If you want to empower your athletes to have more success, more confidence, and more communication with their teammates, give iSport 360 a try today. Shoot me an email, mike@hoopheadspod.com, or give me a call at 216-392-4059 to learn more.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.